You're now listening to Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Man Thoughts with Brian Callen. Used to be the Brian Callen Show. It's now called Man Thoughts. It's kind of exciting. And just a quick, I'll be at the Paris in Vegas tomorrow, Thursday, August. What's tomorrow, Jay Moore?
Oh, I actually don't know.
I think it's August 2nd. Anyway, August 2nd, 3rd.
Since my birthday is August 23rd and we're a week past that, I don't
No, it's August 30th, I think, 31st and 1st. I'll be at the Paris, which is it's the theater. Who knows? It's in Vegas. I'm at the Paris Hotel. I'm really good at self-promotion.
I'm in Paris, France, last month.
That's what it is. Hey, everybody, I'm with Jay Moore, who for my money.
When are you at the Paris, honey?
What's that?
When are you at the Paris?
I'm at the Paris tomorrow, August 29th.
I don't have a calendar on my watch.
I'm at the Paris Friday, and I'm at Paris Saturday.
When does this come out? When does this
drop? I'm dropping this today, I think.
Oh, okay. So
and by the way, we're number 9 on iTunes. You're number 6, Jay, but I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I can't believe it. Anyway, I'm with Jay Moore, who, for my money, one of the funniest people, period. One of the most talented people. And actually, what I love about you is that you're probably one of the best storytellers and amazing with metaphor and cross-referencing. It's unreal. By the way, I'm going to tell you a quick story. One time, Dennis Leary had a charity. Don't remember what it was. I think it was for firemen. And my friends were saying, everybody got up. It was Adam Ferrara, Dennis Leary. Everybody was doing stand-up. And then there was a pause, and they go, and then Jay Moore got up. And that dude is, as Dennis Leary puts it, professionally funny. He tore the whole fucking place up. So there it is, Jay Moore. We should just end the podcast with that.
Yeah, you guys have been great. Check out more stories on iTunes. Leave a comment and write Brian Callen under so I know where you came from.
There you go.
That's been great.
Where are you going to be next?
Make sure you see Brian in Belgium, May 10th.
In Belgium.
Brussels.
Et je parle français là-bas.
Je parle français aussi, mon frère.
Toi aussi?
Peut-être que mon meilleur ami maintenant.
Ah, c'est pas mal. Hein. Tu parles couramment. Pourquoi tu parles
français? Why do you have an Arab accent?
Parce que je suis arabe.
You have a freaking Arab accent.
Because I do a lot of special forces work in the Arab French countries.
You're Delta op. You get to grow your hair long.
You just keep waking up free every morning. I'll do what I do, Jay Moore. Don't worry about it. Did I ever tell you about the time my friend asked the Delta Force guy if he'd ever killed anybody? And he goes like this. He goes, never stop to look, pal. I was like, that's the coolest fucking answer in the history of the world. Never stop to look.
Hold that mic up.
I think it's you got to.
When you said sub-referencing, I think I learned that from, you know, like the comics that we grow up on. Like you grow up to Eddie Murphy and you go, oh, okay, that's one way of doing it. And then you see Carlin, you go, oh my God, that's an entirely different way of doing it. But it was when people go like, what was the most influential? Like Dennis Miller's Off-White album in like 1990?
Yeah, man. I remember that.
It was the album that let me know it's okay. Well, he kind of went through the looking glass with it. But it's okay on that album, I learned. It's okay once in a while, like every a third of the show that only like 10% of the audience understands what you're talking about.
I remember that so well because he would go off in these really obscure references. I had no idea what he was talking about, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting point because a lot of times if somebody's really good at what they do as far as being a stand-up or being even a songwriter, in a way, and I think this is kind of why Saturday Night Live's always been sort of has been around for 35 years, they kind of require you to reach a little bit. Like, they make you kind of reach, and people are willing to reach.
When it's going good, they make you reach.
Yeah, that's true.
Jim Downey told me the show historically, he was the head writer when I was there, he said the show's historically either writer-based or performance-based. Mm. And when it's writer-based, it goes in the toilet. When it's performance-based, to the chagrin of the writers, it's never been better.
You were on Saturday Night Live.
When it was writer-based. But like Farley flopping around doing motivational speaker, there's no writing.
There's no writing.
Hola, mos niños!
If you think about it in a lot of ways.
Ed Grimley, sorry to interrupt you, but like, think back to like the Billy Crystal, Christopher Guest, Martin Short, Jim Belushi, like, those guys were told, they told everyone at NBC, we'll do it, because they were all already famous, but you have to completely leave us alone.
Yeah.
Like, try to pitch Ed Grimley at a table with your peers and write it out. Like, and then he goes, I love Pat Sajak, I must say. They'll be like, I don't get it. Yeah, we're not going to put that on because it's fucking retarded.
Right.
And you're like, no, it's going to be great.
Right. Well, that's what's good about stand-up is you can just get up there and do retarded stuff. The other day I did this whole thing about saving a whale. And I was just talking about how I saved this whale, and I just kept going, getting more and more ridiculous. And what's funny is that I always know I'm doing a good job when 20% of the audience is just staring at me, but the other 80 are laughing.
That's the fun game.
That's always a good feeling, you know?
I know exactly what you mean, and that's the fun game. It's 80-20. You know, it should be about 100 at the beginning and the end in the middle.
I heard a girl in New York who I did a movie with. Her name is Heidi Armbruster, and she's a really just great stage actress. And she looked at my buddy, Mike Young. You know Mike Young, who's a stand-up comic anyway. He's a great guy. And she said, Mike, you know what I love about you? You're 80% perfect. And I thought, that's so interesting. She goes, because the other 20% of imperfection makes you accessible, and it makes me feel like you're a kindred spirit.
Plus, it
and
gives her
like,
something.
Damn.
But women need something to fix. Like that 20%,
absolutely.
That 20%, she goes, oh, okay, I can still work on them in my off time.
Well, women look at men as projects, and that's why I call this thing Man Thoughts, because I was going to ask you, what do you think is, do you have a primary... You know, somebody said that, you know, all of us were walking around with a primary question in our head. A lot of times it's something like, am I lovable? What if I fail? What if I die? It's usually not very positive. And a lot of like a lot of people will tell you to change that primary question in your head. They tell athletes to do that, you know, and things. But do you think you have a primary question in your head? And what do you think takes up most of your thoughts, with the exception of your family and your children's well-being and things?
It shifted with my marriage. It was primarily from the age of 16 to 38, my primary question?
Yeah.
My primary question.
It can be both.
How did you phrase it? Primary question.
Well, I think all of us are always walking around asking ourselves,
okay,
usually an unhelpful question.
I don't know if it was unhelpful or unhelpful. My primary question from 16 to 39... 40 was, how do I get two more rungs up this ladder?
Hmm.
What am I missing? What have I not overturned? What leaf did I not look? Why am I ranked number 6? Why am I ranked number 3? What is it about the guys ahead of me? I mean, if you even want to talk just podcast,
yeah.
What is it? Like, if iTunes's algorithm for rankings is new subscriptions and comments, How can Adam Carolla, Mark Maron, Joe Rogan, and The Nerdist perennially always have new comments? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But it's a fact. They're the kings. And also, like with stand-up, how can I go from a 1,200-seat theater to a 3,000-seat theater? What am I not doing? I think I got the funny locked down.
Yeah.
But there's something. Do I need to make a commitment to just comedy for 5 years? Do I need to just eschew comedy and just do acting? So that would be my primary thought. And then now it's really just how can I just be quieter? How can I be kinder? How can I be calmer?
That seems to be a very mature kind of progression, I think, that all of us men sort of arrive at, right? I mean,
well, you
just said it. I think it's very interesting what you just said, because I was thinking about my fundamental shift and change, and you start to realize that there's a great deal of strength, in fact, as you get older, in being kinder and making the world a better place and giving, as opposed to figuring out a way to create your own status, your own sort of fort, your own armor. Because most of what you do as a young man, I think, is to build armor, whether it's rolling around on a jiu-jitsu mat or in a ring or making money.
It's acquisition. It's Old Testament, like more land, more this, more that. It's more.
Well, because human beings, you know, a lot of anthropologists talk about how human beings have an insatiable demand for the need for safety and for food and for sex.
Yeah.
Food, sex, and safety are the three things that human beings will hoard irrationally, because we've evolved to a point where that is something that we just have to have, and maybe in a society where we don't have to do that as much, and we're lucky enough to be fulfilled by what we do artistically, for the few of us who are able to do that.
The irony seems to be, when I got calmer and quieter and kinder, that's when my stand-up increased threefold. Like on stage, not trying to bash people's face in,
yeah,
like over, like, I want to fucking kill, yeah,
you get addicted to that, yeah,
and fucking the stool and talking about eating ass, and then, you know, there's nothing wrong with a finger in the ass when you're sucking your dick, and you know, you're fucking, you're doing coke, and then it's fucking great. Oh, did I say I was staying at the Embassy Suites down the street by mistake? I didn't really say it by mistake. Let's all get our dick sucked tonight,
right? And then you release doves and and fucking and blow the stage
that.
Up.
Hawks.
I'm gonna say yeah, and here's the fucking Hawks.
I release
because no other comic does
fighting
that.
Gamecocks. Gamecocks. I release Gamecocks.
Gamecocks.
I let them cut up the audience,
and you let them cut you up for whatever reason.
Like Gigi Allen, that's I just so take a shit on stage and I let fucking
and bite
cocks.
The heads off of hamsters.
Yeah. And then now being calm.
And roll around in broken glass.
Yeah, and quiet.
I can't believe you just fucking referenced Gigi Allen.
That's the Dennis want, Miller. Gigi
wanna,
Allen's in the corner going, where's Twyla Thurp?
If you want to see.
If you when wanna, you said you don't know what they're talking about, Dennis Miller on the Off-White album, I remember going, like it starts almost like a hack premise. Like, how about these people? They feel like they have to act out the song when they're out on the dance floor, right? Hey, ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no valley low. Hey, pal, ain't no dance floor fucking wide enough. Which is like just a lowest common denominator, easy bit.
Great
and then
joke,
goes,
though.
And then long beat. What's with this kabuki shit, Twyla? Knock off the mumashans. Get a limbo stick. The only word I know is limbo stick. I don't know who Twyla at the time.
It's genius.
No idea who Twyla was.
Yeah.
Didn't know Kabuki was, unless it was a wrestler from WWF spitting green shit in people's faces.
Right.
Didn't know Momoshans. But I knew, I just assumed it was other level New York Times art section dance stuff, and I just made the journey with him.
But see, that's so interesting because human beings learn to communicate way before they develop language. You know, that's something that I find to be very interesting. Where
well, you
they
have a
did
baby,
a,
so you know that.
Yeah, they did a study. There's a book called, I think it's Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. And one of the things that they did a study on is that they found that doctors who get sued for malpractice are doctors who have a who actually have a dominant tone to their approach. So it had nothing to do with their performance, nothing to do with their skill level, their degrees. It had, and they took out what they were saying, and they just recorded them speaking to their patients. The ones, and if you listen to the tone, with no words, just the tone, the ones with the dominant tone were always the ones to get sued. And the doctors that spent just 5 minutes more with the bedside manner, never got sued, even when it was their fault.
But
so it came
down to
dominant
tone, and they are saying things to, like, "What if they're like, then we're going to remove the mole on your knee, and then I'm going to kiss your pussy. Turn over, please." Like, whoa, what?
If you ask
that
nicely,
was very dominant.
If you ask nicely and with respect,
no, I'll kiss your pussy.
I'm just going to kiss. I just like to just kiss your pussy if I could. If I could. That's my. This is. Have you ever seen my polite, my polite pervert. You ever seen my impression of the polite pervert? Ready?
No.
This is the really polite pervert.
I mean, yes, I'm ready. No, I haven't seen it.
Excuse me. Do you know if there's anywhere I can come around here? That's my. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to bother you. Is there anywhere I can dump a load anywhere around here? I like to come.
I see. Okay. Me and you doing this sketch. We're in a writer's room in a place where we can swear.
Yeah.
Like an HBO sketch show. Yeah. Here's the butt. You got to have an ending for the sketch.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm like the fifth lady you've approached, right?
Okay, yeah. Hi, ma'am. I'm sorry. I've been asking everybody around here. I'm just wondering. I hate to bother you. Do you know if there's anywhere around here I can come?
Excuse me? Come like?
Oh, I'm just empty my nutsack. Just shoot white worms everywhere. Have my dick barf.
Well, I have 10 minutes before. You want to just come all over my face?
Oh, thank you. That'd be so.
Ba-dum-bam.
You did, but you just got your hair done. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. How come that's not on TV, huh?
Huh? What'd you say? Dick barf? And then what, white snakes?
Yeah, heavy white worms.
Heavy, oh, they said white snakes.
I was thinking about the most...
Here I go again from my dick.
I love...
Going down the only road.
I like coming up with the most disgusting way things to say when you come. These are white worms. I'm shooting white worms.
But there's no way... Actually, you probably do say that once in a while to your bride.
No, I don't say anything. I think I sound like I'm agreeing violently.
Man thoughts.
Yeah, man thoughts.
What do I sound like when I come?
Man thoughts.
Ooh.
Wait, let's get back to Dennis Miller and what you said.
I realized the other day that every once in a while I say it's like, you little fucker. Like you say like mean things.
You little fucker.
You little fucker. Like,
oh,
wow,
that's so good.
I don't know any other scenario where I can really pull that off in the home.
That's like my joke about
hey,
this.
Hey, there's no soy milk, you little fucker?
I love those endearing but really aggressive insults. You bitch.
But I think in the throes of sex, you tap into, if you want to talk man thoughts, you are tapping into the if you're doing it well, in my opinion, and you get some sort of rhythm. When you're married, you're in such a rhythm with it and a routine that I think you're able to tap into the nooks and the crannies and the recesses, and you get to fill in those blank spots that they need filled. Like, you know, I'm not saying every woman needs to be called a little fucker when they're
But
why do you call her a bitch? Why do you slap their ass? It's not because it feels good. Like, nobody, like, oh, I love when you call me a bitch. It's soothing. Like, no.
No.
It's because it's some weird recess, something in you.
It's a caveman thing, bro.
Right, I mean, it takes the right woman for you to go, I'm going full ahead to fill in these
fucking... But it goes back to the Dennis Miller thing and what I was talking about. It's the fucking intention in your voice. It's intention's everything. You can say anything, and we read intention. So if the intention is, if you go, you fucking little slut bitch, and you, what you're really saying is, I love you, you know.
It's so hot, me imagining that you're a little slut bitch. That's really what you're saying.
Of course.
I'm imagining there's four guys behind me pulling their dicks because they're next.
And there you go. That's right. And you get to be the dominant one. Tonight. I'm all over that. You fucking...
cars pulling up
those
right
four
now.
Guys
like, when
us.
Are they? When is she ready for me? I'm first, bud. Or at least 21st.
I said that to a guy in my acting class. I go, I think sometimes I fantasize about my girl getting banged by another guy, but then I'm like right there, but it really makes me crazy at the same time. He goes, I feel so weird about that. He goes, you think you're the only guy in the world that's ever fucking dreamed about that so that you can come back and punish your girl for cheating on you in the same breath? I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm kind of normal. But, you know, fucking that 50 Shades of Grey. Do you know that women are going out and buying the rope and hardware stores are running out of it because there's a particular kind of rope, I guess, in that book to get tied up by their men? So, you know, Paul Rudd makes a lot of money because he's a sweetheart, because he plays a guy who would never cheat on you. And then at the same time, Paul Rudd or whatever in the movie. But then at the same time, they want fucking Christian Grey. They want a guy that's going to fuck, you know. So we're all complicated. Women are complicated. One minute they want to be treated like a princess, lavished with gifts. The other, you know, grabbed by the hair and called a dirty little whore.
You never choke me anymore. Don't you love me?
Yeah, exactly. I've heard that before.
I remember when we were dating, you used to just choke me and spit in my mouth. And now it's just, you tell me you love me and you kiss the nape of my neck like a gentleman fairy.
Because you're the mother of my children, that's why.
Yay!
It's that mafia thing. I would never put my dick in your mouth because you kiss my children with that mouth.
That's what she kissed my kids with. Miller was the guy that taught me, he didn't know he was teaching me this, but it's okay to have spurts where there's only 20. Okay, I was at the Brea Improv last weekend. And on Sunday night show, every time I do stand up, there's 11 minutes where I truly like go mad. Like I've lost my mind. Yeah. And I said something and I realized, oh my God, that sounded exactly like Harvey Keitel. And I think we were just talking about Little People, Big World on TLC. And TLC, all their shows are midgets and chocolate. Right. And they're like, why don't we combine them? The littlest chocolate tears. Like, it's all midgets and all midgets and midgets. And then the whole thing was, what is that network meeting like? Why don't we just combine the two? And I realized, I don't know why Harvey Keitel is in the boardroom of this network. And then I go, look. And then I started doing
Harvey. That's a good guy. I know Harvey.
Then
That's
I started doing
good.
Harvey Keitel, Reservoir Dogs, but Tim Roth was Matthew Roloff from Little People, Big World. And I didn't explain any of
You're a genius.
And it was just podcast fans that were somehow just took the walk with me off the plank. And I go, look, Joe, he shot in his little gut. It's my fault. He got shot in his little gut. That's before he turned it into a goddamn tiny shooting gallery. Ping, ping. What the fuck was Tiny Joe thinking? And I didn't explain anything.
And they went with you.
There was 15, no, you know what? I'll say 22% were like,
what the fuck?
This is the all-time greatest thing I've ever seen. But then, you know, 78% are going, I don't even know, like, what's going on. This is not the guy from Ghost Whisperer.
This is what happens.
Somehow they switch out the Ghost Whisperer guy with this guy.
This is what happens. This happens
oh,
in every
to
show.
Put a point on, real quick.
Yeah.
And to comics listening, just don't do an hour of that, but don't ever back away from that because that 22% will follow you to the ends of the
earth.
It's
true. The other day, I was on stage, and this is what happens to me.
I'll take your thoughts off the air.
I go, I should take my shirt off, but I'm wearing a leotard usually to keep things in tight. And I go, I was up there and I go, you know, I want to be a Spanish dancer. And I had no joke, but I just found myself being a Spanish dancer. And my father, Ramon, Rafael, stop dancing like that. Your feet are bleeding. Then I will wear bandages on my feet, Papa. And I went into this whole story, and then he cuts my feet. I'm like, don't do this, Brian. Don't do this. You got to go back to your bit. You got to go back to your scene. I went off on a movie I want to live in, and I was like, this is simply mischievous and undisciplined. And I went on and on, and finally he cuts my feet off. He makes me go to medical school.
You will never dance again.
But Pedro said, you know, Rafael, you can learn to dance on your stumps.
My father has three names already in this bit.
No, Pedro's the small one, the guy who plays the mandolin for me.
Oh,
he's a
okay.
small music.
Rafael Ramon.
He's the dwarf.
Pedro.
He's the dwarf. And he plays the mandolin, and he carries me on his back to the cornfields. I hold on to the corn stalks, and I dance on my stumps. I'm going off, and I finally tag it with, it's a movie called Footless, and they fucking went with me, and I had no idea where I was going with it. And believe me, I'll be doing that in Vegas again because I got to find something in it.
At the Paris
sometimes you just get the devil in you. And you're like, I'm gonna see where this fucking takes me.
I think also an audience is really excited when you jump off the cliff and you build your wings on the way down.
Exactly.
There's such peril, and it's so real. And they know that what you're saying, you didn't say to the 7 o'clock audience, you didn't say Thursday night. They know right there, we're all free falling together.
Look, man, listen to people listening. You know, this is what I say to young people. Life, the moments you remember in life are those moments you're in the danger zone. The great jazz musicians, Albert Murray writes about the heroes of jazz. And those are the people that would go off and they'd swing somewhere out there. And then they'd have to find their way back.
Coltrane.
They'd have to stay within, they'd stay within the theme. And life, if you think about your moments that where you felt the most alive, when you didn't know what the fuck was going to happen next, whether it was going after that girl, joining the wrestling team because you didn't think you could make it and you were skinny and it was like, fucking this guy's doing 36 pull-ups, whatever it is you threw yourself into, and you were like, this is a free fall and I don't know what the outcome is and I'm terrified. I'm going to say always when you do that, and you just listen to that voice and you allow that voice to take you somewhere, that's when you find gold. That's when you find out who you really are. And that's when those are the moments you look back on and you go, I'm really proud of those moments because
really
I was fucking terrified.
If you want to hear a guy, specifically jazz, if you want to YouTube something on this show from us talking, if you can listen to John Coltrane doing My Favorite Things, which is the most rudimentary basic song from
these are
the
a
sound
few
of
my favorite things.
Dun,
when
dun,
a dog
dun,
bites,
dun, dun,
yep, heard
dun,
it.
Dun. Like we're humming it now. At like it's ad nauseum. It's by rote.
Yeah,
he goes so far out.
Yep,
and then comes all the way back. It's
That's
one
right.
of the greatest musical achievements ever. And a lot of people that don't have an ear for jazz are like, "This is just fucking noise." But when you tap into it, smoke weed. When you tap into it, you get it. It's like double dutch. When you go, these guys, he's kept the time.
Yeah,
I'd rather listen to that than like
Coltrane
the ninth.
Used to wake up and play his dreams on the horn. And then when he was dying of cancer, he had so much more music inside of him. And he just got frantic at the end of his life and just tried to put out as much as he possibly could. It's like Duke Ellington, who created more music than actually anybody in the history of music, from what I understand. Even more than Mozart, Beethoven, Duke Ellington, from a volume point of view, and if you listen to critics, quality music.
Yeah.
And Duke Ellington just wrote some of the great classics standing in fucking line. Standing in the unemployment line, on the hood of his car, on the floor of his hotel.
Black guy?
Yes, he was. He was a.
You said unemployment line.
Duke Ellington was a great genius, as are you, Jay Moore. You're the Duke Ellington of comedy. There, I said it.
I hope not. If I'm standing in an unemployment line writing songs on the hood of my car.
I think it was the unemployment line.
Barefoot girl sitting on the hood of a Dodge drinking warm beer
in
a
soft
summer
rain. The rat pulls into town, rolls up his pants. Together they take a stab at romance and disappear down Flamingo Lane.
That's Jungle Land
by Springsteen. And all of you should listen to Greetings from Asbury Park and Born to Run.
No. If they're going to pick one,
what do you say?
Born to Run.
Yeah, you got to say
It's
Born
like
to
a
run.
Book of poetry.
You gotta say Born
it's what
run.
Everyone says Dylan is.
I know.
Because Dylan,
he wrote those songs when he was 24 years old, by the way.
He admitted on Spectacle with Elvis Costello, Springsteen admitted Born in Greetings from Asbury Park was written using a rhyming dictionary.
No.
Yeah, but if you listen to Blinded by the Light, Mad Men, Drummers, Bummers, Indians in the Summer, like it's all just, it doesn't mean anything.
A teenage diplomat.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But then you get like, you know, there are great songs on it, like It's Hard to Be a Saint in the City and stuff.
Fuck. Are you
but
kidding
Born
me?
To Run.
Lost in the Flood.
Together,
he tells these
stories. Let's fast forward to Born to Run. Together, Wendy, we can live with the sadness. I'll love you with all the madness
in
my
soul.
Like that is what I need to hear. on a daily.
I want to die with you, Wendy, on the streets tonight, in an everlasting kiss. Hey, boom, boom.
Yeah, the amusement park rises bold and stark. Kids are huddled on the beach in the mid.
Girls comb their hair in rear view mirrors, and the boys try to look so hard.
But everyone listening, I'm guessing our audiences combined are probably like, they know this.
Right.
Highlands jammed with broken arrows. But the lyrics to that song sprung from Cages on Highway 9.
They're a fucking anthem. They're an anthem, and they captured. And by the way, in my opinion, even with all the internet and everything else, Springsteen, if you listen to the songs from 72, 73, 74, 75, they're as relevant today to things like teenage angst, to longing, to being lost and not knowing where the fuck you are in your life. They're as relevant today. They speak to those sentiments and those emotions as strongly today as they ever have. And that's
why
Springsteen at 62 is still packing.
Beneath this giant Exxon sign
that brings this fair city light. Yeah.
And I mean, just to write...
Go, guys, listen to Jungle Land. Really listen to it. It's an anthem. It's one of the greatest songs ever written, man. And
Elvis
I don't care
Costello
what kind of music you're
best,
into.
In my opinion, who I think is wildly underrated in the annals of music is Elvis Costello. Yeah. He said, when I listened to Springsteen, he said it to Bruce, he said, when the Rangers had a homecoming in Harlem late last night, as a kid in England listening on the radio, I needed to know, who is the Ranger?
God.
What was the homecoming?
Yeah. And you know what that was? The homecoming was a gang fight. The homecoming, what he was talking about, he was using a metaphor for two gangs about to meet up and have a war.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh, you're way deep, too. It's great. Yeah. I'm nuts like you are with it.
Well, you know, I got to talk to him for an hour and a half, just he and I, Springsteen, about music and about how he writes songs and about stand-up and about acoustics. And it was one of the highlights of my life, man, because...
He didn't let you down? Because a lot of times you're like, oh, I don't know, I was just making
shit rhyme. Not only did he not let me down, what I found interesting was that as great as he is, it's because he just shows up all the time. But more importantly, he stays so honest to that inner voice, that inner compass. I asked him, I said, did you ever want to write a book? He goes, no. Why? He said, I didn't want to dilute what I was trying to do. I didn't want to dilute my expression. And that purity... You know, when I think of Springsteen and I watch him, I think the reason everything in the world seems okay, and that's what you read great novels for and you listen to great music for, because they make the world, you realize there's a great deal of beauty in the world that you can't measure. They make everything okay. You know, our lives are usually, I got to get enough to eat, I got to make enough money, I got to get my ranking higher, and you're concerned with all these things. And then when you listen to great music, you read a great book, or you look at a great painting, I think what it does is it reminds you that there is something much bigger out there than you, and then that which you see in front of you and that which you can measure with a tape or with math. I think it makes you feel more alive.
Well, that's his whole
alive.
Narrative, is that, and that's what spoke to me growing up in Jersey as an outcast. I was a wrestler. You were a wrestler. Yeah. Not belonging to any clique, kind of friendly with all the cliques. Yep. But you know what? When push comes to shove on the weekends, I realized I'm riding my bike alone.
That's right.
Looking for other cliques. Like, where is everybody?
I was always on the outside looking in, man.
Where is everybody? Yeah. Oh, they went up to Greenwood Lake. Like, well, where's the invite? Or like, how come my family doesn't do anything? Or why is everyone 2 years older than me or two years younger than me? I'm in Jersey and I can see the Manhattan skyline. And so when Springsteen writes everything, the narrative usually is there's something so great and it's just out of my reach.
It's just out of my
reach. And
the
other narrative is there was – it's the flip side of the coin of the adult going, boy, back then we had it. You know, laying on the reservoir, I could feel your body on mine and like in the river.
In the river, yeah.
And you go, like, I just had to get a job at a factory, no flowers, no wedding dress. That night we went down to – so it's the flip side of the coin and you're going – I don't want to wind up like narrative B.
That's right, man.
Looking back.
Those songs scared me.
I don't want fucking glory days.
They fucking scared me, Jay.
Bullshit glory days.
That's such an interesting thing to say.
I'm never sitting at a bar with a guy talking about high school, hit me in the face with a shovel.
My biggest fear was regret. My biggest fear was I was gonna be one of those guys in that song. And that's where art changes you.
We want to be the guy. Yeah. I will love you with all the madness in my soul. Yeah. Mr. State Trooper, please don't stop me.
Yeah. Mr. State Trooper.
Because I'm going to see a chick in town, I'm going to make it happen. Yeah. Baby, this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap.
It's a suicide rap.
And we got to get out while
we're still
young.
Because
tramps like us, baby, we were born to run.
Right.
That's That's how, that's me.
By the way, which he'll now say when he sings that song now, and he sings the acoustic version of Born to Run, he'll say, you know, I wrote this song when I was 24, and I realized, you know, I was always kind of wanting to just drive and get out of there, you know. And he said, but what I also realized that is that when you're a rebel, if it's not attached to anything, if it's not connected to anything, it ends up being meaningless. So that's as you get older, you realize that you need also to be connected to things and to people and to make a difference. But
it's kind of like the monkey bars to me. I realize how weird that sounded. You know, you swing from one bar to the next to one bar to the next. And as comics, we don't even know the next bar is there.
Yeah.
But we have to have the freedom to reach for the next bar. Hmm. And that's why when comics have to make apologies in comedy clubs and people protest and you can't talk about rape, you can't say someone's retarded, you can't make fun of the gays, you can't make fun of the blacks, then you know what? Then just remove comedy as a job.
Yeah.
Because as Patrice once said, if I can't go there, it might not be funny.
Yeah.
I might talk about rape and it might not be funny. This is Patrice, what he said. It might not be funny, but you must. It's my gig. You have to, society, allow me to go there, root around, pull shit out of the closets, and you might go, that was the worst fucking rape joke and offensive thing I've ever heard. And I'll go, yeah, I didn't think it worked either. And then we're good.
Yeah.
But I have to be able to reach for that next rung.
Stand-up is the last vestige of free speech in a lot of ways, man. It's the last place you can really get up and say shit that is shocking or that is disturbing and be, for the most part, unless you're Daniel Tosh and really in the spotlight, be left alone, you know, for the most part.
I think he's funny as shit.
Oh, Daniel Tosh is one of the funniest. Tosh, to me, is one of the funniest comics ever.
This year was the first time I ever heard a stand-up on XM Radio. And I was like, he sounds a little bit like Dane, his voice.
Yeah, Daniel is a guy who, to me, when I saw him at first, he's so authentically honest. He's just so, like, in his real life, he's just fucking straightforward. If he doesn't like you, you're going to know it.
Good.
But he's so talented and he's just such a funny comic. I find him, I walked up to him. I remember I walked up, I saw him, first time I saw him, I walked up to him at the Laugh Factory. And I said, you're one of the best comics I've ever seen in my life, period. And he goes, that's really not true. I go, no, you're one of the best. Right now, for me, you're the best comic I've seen. And he goes, that's really not true, but thank you. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. And since we've gotten friendly and stuff, but he's just phenomenal to me.
I noticed the basketball hoop over your shoulder. How often you go out there and shoot?
I like to just run up and dunk the shit out of a ball once in a while. That's true.
With what, your fucking mini aerobic trampoline you got
out there? I wish I could dunk a ball.
That's why you got that Joyce DeWitt mini tramp.
I can just touch the rim. Now, let me ask you.
I want to know more about this dunking routine with your mini Joyce DeWitt aerobic trampoline that I've made up. You go out there. We used to do it because our basketball hoop growing up was attached to the garage.
Yeah.
And my dad had the garage door with like paneling. So you could run up and step. There was only like a half inch. It stuck out.
That's all you needed.
And then I was just bringing the thunder. I was like fucking Dominique in his prime. I'd go up there. Clack, clack.
Dominique Wilkins, by the way.
Coming down was always an adventure.
Dominique Wilkins could take a dime off the top of the backboard. He could pick a dime off the top of the backboard.
He was a very poor man.
Yeah.
He needed that dime.
Yeah.
Real quick, I played basketball in... I'm terrible at basketball. Like, yeah. I am so bad. I think wrestlers...
You don't have a lot of fast twitch muscle.
I do, actually. Yeah. I just can't make the ball go in the cylinder. I think most wrestlers are poor because we're drilled.
Well, first of all, basketball, you're not allowed to basketball play, and wrestling are both winter sports in high school.
And if you get caught with a basketball, coaches don't like that because guys quit wrestling to play basketball because basketball practice is playing basketball. Wrestling is the only practice where you work and you have to push past exhaustion and push common sense of
wrestling.
I feel like I'm going to throw up. Keep
wrestling
going.
Wrestling is so fucking hard. It's like, I love when people go, when you're horseback riding, you're using every muscle in your body. Hey, shut the fuck up, okay? You come roll around on a mat for 3 minutes.
Bring your horse.
For 3 minutes, bro.
I'll see what jack happens off your horse.
Body. Yeah.
We used to play. I played.
What's the sport that you have the most respect for? You know a lot about
MMA.
Sports. It is, right? I can't believe you said that. I feel the same way.
The guy that loses has a black belt.
Yeah.
The guy that loses was a four-time national champion wrestler.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
Like, was it Rashad Evans just beat Phil Davis?
No, I don't think it was Rashad Evans.
Wasn't it Sugar beat him? Decisioned him?
I don't think Rashad's fought since John Jones, has he?
It was pre-John Jones.
Yeah, I think the fighters need a union.
But Phil Davis is like a four-time national champion wrestler at Penn State.
Now, Rashad Evans beat Phil Davis, I believe.
That's what I just said.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying. Okay, I'm sorry.
What did I say? You said Joe Lozon.
Name. Yeah, you said another name. You said you said Dennis Miller. He did beat Dennis Miller as well.
Don't you love the fact that Phillip Rivers got into the octagon out there, huh? I guess Brees Sandusky to let anyone roll around with other guys.
What's he doing, Dennis Miller? Do you know?
Just fucking stumping for the right because they need a voice, I guess.
Is that what it is?
The right wing really needs a voice.
They need a voice.
They don't have their own network or anything, so they need a comic to
out. Are you a political guy?
No. I would never legitimize either party with my affiliation. I think everyone should be independent.
Yeah.
I don't think they should have a D or an R in front of their names. I think it should be like a game show. They all do their speeches, and you line up for who you like, you vote for who you like, and then after the primary, they lift up their curtain and go, surprise! That guy's actually a Republican. You're like, holy shit, Chris Christie, I love that guy. I'm a Democrat, I just voted for a Republican.
I'm fucking reading, I just finished a book called The China Study. I recommend it very highly to everybody.
More Than Fighter's Heart by Sam Sheridan.
Fighter's Heart's a great book, and I'm going to have Sam Sheridan back on my podcast very soon.
He might want to return a tweet saying he's the greatest of all time, but you know, whatever.
Oh, he does. He probably didn't get it. He doesn't look at his tweets.
Then why have a Twitter account?
Because he's told to do it by his publisher. He's a fucking Sam doesn't.
Sam writes his book all day. More than Outliers and Fighter's Heart.
Let's talk for a second. What are your? Are you a reader?
Yeah.
What are your?
And I'm not a bleeder.
Can you?
I'm not like Modine.
Off the top of your head,
Vision
it's okay.
Quest,
it's okay
bleeder.
If you don't.
Like
if you don't
that.
Do that. You're a bleeder, and I like that.
When Shoot's walking with the fucking board across the
Do I remember it?
And here's the fatal flaw of Vision
and with
Quest.
The Madonna song,
I'm crazy for you. Nothing makes me want to run fucking sprints.
And who was that girl? I love that girl. I just saw her in something.
I know exactly. She was in Tagged.
Matthew Modine's girlfriend. Oh, I loved her.
Sasha Banachek. She played Sasha Banachek.
Damn.
What the hell's her name? Tweet it.
I don't know. But give me your books. Give me the seminal books.
Real quick, the fatal flaw of Vision Quest is that Shoot and Matthew Modine were within 40 pounds of one another.
I don't know.
Like, but Matthew Modine's cutting weight to fight Shoot.
It's
and
true,
Shoot is like 200. He looks like fucking Brock Lesnar.
Jesus, does he ever.
He's got a fucking car on his back like Ken
he's
Patera.
He's got that log on his back. And he's
the world's strongest man. He's just running
Jesus.
A ship anchor in a Yugo. And he's carrying it up a hill in Cyprus. And Matthew Modine's like, I got another bloody nose from cutting weight.
One of those.
I don't have enough iron in my diet.
I went to Dan Gable's.
I got to get down to 120 and fight Shoot. Like, really?
It's
I
true.
Don't think so,
he
you
bleeds
assholes.
Out of his nose. But I went to Iowa. I went to Dan Gable's intensive wrestling camp in Iowa, and the Hawkeyes would be there. And it was such a wild
Dan Gable lost his last fight. He's no Cale Sanderson.
No, and you'd see these German kids, these Germanic sort of farm
Linda
boys.
Something.
They've been wrestling their
Linda.
Whole life. Oh, well, Linda fucking, I don't know.
Linda Tarantino?
I'll go with that.
It's Linda something.
I'll go with Italian. It's an Italian name.
All right. So you were going to ask me about books.
Your books. I get a lot of requests on my, like, what book should I read and stuff. Read The China Study, everybody, only because he advocates a vegan diet, which I have my problems with.
Fucking
vegans. I have my problems with it, but.
I don't need anything that has eyes.
More important,
you're an idiot.
Now, more importantly, he's a very credible scientist who talks about how industry. The food and drug industry in particular have hijacked not only our government and our scientists,
all right,
but
let's
also
keep it light and funny.
Yeah, but also,
criminy.
How they basically set the standard.
You fucking
that
Art
is
Bell?
Not in our interests. It's a good book. Give me your books. Give me the five books you'd recommend to somebody.
I've read Fighter's Heart by Sam Sheridan probably
Great
four
book.
Times.
Great book.
I always go back. And Fighter's Mind by Sam Sheridan. But I'll go Fighter's Heart. A fiction or not, I love Truman's biography. I love presidential history, Nixon's biography,
wow.
Truman's biography,
wow.
JFK's biography.
Really?
He was given last rites by the Catholic Church three times while in office because he had Addison's disease. Did you know that?
No.
He was a walking cadaver. He was a dead man.
He had serious, serious issues, right?
And the only way to treat it was with massive amounts of steroids, side effects of which brown skin, clipped speech, and a sex drive of a fucking mule.
What was Addison's? What is Addison's?
It's something
disease?
With your back. I believe it's a degenerative back disease, but he had a back brace that came up to his armpits.
Wow.
If you watch the Zapruder film, the first shot goes through his trachea. That doesn't kill you. That's a tracheotomy.
Mm.
That's not a fatal shot through your trachea. And he goes to lean forward to duck down as you're taught. He can't because of his brace.
Oh, my God.
Watch the Zapruder film. He goes like this. He goes about 8 inches forward, and then he just comes back up because he can't get down because his brace is. Forbids
well,
him, and then they make his brain explode.
I saw in the New York Times one time the amount of drugs he was taking on a daily basis.
That's for his back.
It's the craziest thing in the world. I couldn't believe how
like
much
Elvis
medication
level.
He was on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love those presidential biographies. Like,
what do you like about them? Does it just make these people very human?
It makes them human. The amount, you know, great people are born great. People, what is it? What's that expression? You're either born with greatness, you acquire greatness, or you have greatness thrust upon you. Mm-hmm. Like Nixon seems to have been born great and sabotaged himself the whole way with his amazing paranoia. Like, he was an absolute crazy person. Yeah, clinical crazy person. Mm. But best dictator we ever had. And he never gets credit for ending the Vietnam War, which he did.
And for bringing us closer to China, creating the China, the Sino-Alliance.
But he ended he pulled everyone out. And people go, yeah, but he bombed Laos and Cambodia. Yeah, but let me tell you something. You meet any Vietnam vet, when those jets flew over into Laos and Cambodia, they fucking cheered. They were getting the shit shut out of them because the North Vietnamese were using those countries as supply lines. Right. And Nixon knew if he put it through Senate, they would kibosh it.
That's right.
So he goes, Henry, I don't want to deal with those goddamn Jews. Not realizing Henry Kissinger is so Jewish, he wears a fucking cape with a Star of David on it. That's how crazy he was.
I think a lot of Kissinger's family was killed in the Holocaust, in fact.
Oh, Henry, these goddamn Ivy League Jews. They don't want to listen to a football player from Whittier. So he knew the only way to get shit done is to circumvent Congress entirely. Even though it's completely illegal, what he did.
He and Kissinger did a lot of their foreign policy planning in the White House, just the two of them, right?
Truman also got some crazy shit done by avoiding Congress. There was a steelworker strike during the Korean War, and you can't have guys not forging steel when you need tanks made in a fucking hurry because we just unloaded everything from World War II. That's over with.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Wait, China just invaded the peninsula? He said in his State of the Union address, and he was like a Missouri, Independence, Missouri, and anybody on strike in the Steelworkers Union is going to get drafted tomorrow, and that's all there is to it. He said that in his and he walked off the podium. And they said, I don't think that's legal. He goes, well, let's just see if they go back to work. We'll worry about it after that.
This is Truman.
They all went back to work. He said, if you're on strike and you're in the steel union, tomorrow morning you're getting drafted into the Korean War.
Wow.
Which is completely illegal.
Yeah.
But didn't tell Senate or Congress, this is what I'm thinking. Because they would have went, well, because for those of you that know anything about civics, Congress, their only job is to cock block.
Right.
If you're a Democrat and it's majority Republicans, they're just going to drag their dicks across your face.
That's right.
If you are a Republican president and Congress is Democrats, they're just going to drag their
dicks.
By the
way, the Founding Fathers did that on purpose. And the reason they did that on purpose,
checks and balances.
George Washington said government should be a very slow, slow, glacial process because government does what? It passes laws. And a lot of times he didn't say that, but the zeitgeist becomes, you know, the public sentiment. Let's pass this law because somebody did this and we need this. And a bunch of politicians are running and the emotions are running high. Well, no, you want ineffective government, actually. And a lot of people in media say, well, this bipartisanship is terrible. We need to get together. No, we don't. That's not what the Founding Fathers wanted. They wanted conflict.
And I've said this for years, if you wanted to, look, Giuliani, Chris Christie in Jersey, Truman, these are the guys that get the people that get shit done are the people that have no interest in reaching across the aisle.
Right.
The moment you say, and then we'll, you know, work with our friends across the aisle, you have just said, we're fucking gay.
Yeah.
And they go, he's wounded. Let's just bring him down. He wants to work with us.
Right.
Just steamroll your shit through.
Right.
Don't tell anybody. Don't look back.
Well, that's what politics is.
It's supposed to be two
competing philosophies, right? And then everybody's got their own agenda. And
well, hold on, right there. That's so insane that in this country that we have all signed off that there are only two competing philosophies.
Well, and there aren't, but for the most part,
but that's what we've signed off on, a two-party system. Like, it's the Democratic philosophy and the Republican philosophy.
And that's my problem.
That's it.
My problem with, I am a libertarian. What does that mean? I'm just concerned with maximum personal liberty. I can't vote Republican because I'm not a Christian and I don't believe in restricting abortion. And these guys, I believe drugs should be legal. And I believe a lot of these things where I just think give individuals maximum personal responsibility over their lives. At the same time, I also think government should be really small because what happens when government's as big as it is industry will take advantage of it, like the drug companies and everything else.
I'm a Christian who has voted Republican, mm-hmm. and I have voted Democrat. but you want government to be small. And I understand that. And I am with
that's a broad. I'm being very broad here.
Okay, but let's say this real quick. Like the right, their big thing now, especially during this election cycle, is government is out of control big.
Yeah, but the right.
So they had the GOP convention. Hurricane Isaac is just ass raping the Gulf Coast.
I'm disgusted with the Republican Party right
now. Who's really providing all the relief and cots and food and meals ready to eat for the people that are that have lost their homes because of Hurricane Isaac?
Yeah.
The fucking government.
The much needed government.
The federal emergency, you know, FEMA.
FICA.
I call it FICA.
The federal emergency with an I camp association.
So you got all the GOP people. And again, save your fucking tweets. I vote both sides. I vote for what I actually think is well. You should try it sometime and disregard the R or the D in front of the person's name.
Right.
I love Chris Christie. I love Gavin Newsom, our lieutenant governor of California. You want to talk about a guy that is a real politician? Gavin Newsom was mayor of San Francisco. He is a dyed-in-the-wool Catholic. Doesn't believe in abortion. Doesn't believe in gay marriage. But he's the mayor of San Francisco. And everyone that voted for him is gay, so he, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So he has to vote for the gay marriage because his constituency is
demands
gay people.
It.
He has to go against his own personal beliefs and vote for the people that put him in. That's what a real politician is. Chris Christie's like, look, I love teachers. The teachers union is fucking insane. Tenure after 5 years,
it's ridiculous.
Based on fucking what?
Tenure meaning you can't fire
you,
a
because
teacher.
You didn't finger
regardless,
anybody in the courtroom.
Regardless of their performance.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Well, that's what happens.
I hope he stays fat.
You and I are both.
He is going to be president in 2016, by the way.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Governor Christie?
Absolutely. Hmm. I'll tell you right now.
I like that prediction.
And I'm lining up right now to vote for Chris Christie. And the guy, it takes fucking balls to say, hey, municipal jobs like firemen, policemen, and ambulance workers are draining this state.
But all you have to do is look at California. This state is broke
because
unions, all different unions, start trying to outbid each other. So if the firemen's read a book, Boomerang, and he really breaks it down. The guy who wrote The Big Short, Michael Lewis. Boomerang and The Big Short's a required reading, I think, for everybody.
No,
because,
but it's easier than that, though, Brian. Because if you have if let's say you're a fireman, and look, don't fucking tweet me that I'm anti-fireman.
You've done charity for firemen.
Of course I have. They can save your life, and they live in my name. Ladder Company 69 on Sunset Boulevard, Ladder Company 23 right down the street. I see you guys on the run and on the beach. Holler, what's up?
They're the best.
They're doing freeways
they
in the parking
lives.
Lot at Will
they
Rogers
save,
Beach.
Really?
It's just they park the truck.
Studs.
They get an incline press. They pull out of the fucking truck, and they're in there doing
studs.
Dumb
studs.
I run by, and I go, hey, 23 is kind of talking shit. And they go, really? Like, they just stir the
fucking
pot.
If I was a fireman, I'd take my shirt off, and girls are like, do you work out? I'd be like, nah, this just comes from saving lives.
Yeah, you want to see want to slide up and down
lives.
My pole?
Here you go. I'm going to get you pregnant.
But the thing with a municipal job, if you're a fireman, or let's say policeman, if you're a policeman and you work for 20 years and retire, you get a 20-year pension. You're getting paid twice for one job. And to take it out of that municipal context, like General Motors, like these the automobile industry, eventually you reach a point where you have more retirees getting all of their pensions than you have actual current employees.
Math. It's simple math.
It's like filling a flat seesaw and just filling one side up with water.
It has
bankrupt. It's going to tilt itself.
These counties are bankrupt. These cities and counties in this state are bankrupt. It's not that different than Greece, everybody. And it's because what happens is people start – basically these pension plans got so out of hand – and they negotiated and strong-armed their way into these pension plans where the state can no longer afford it. We can't afford to hire new workers. And so what happens is you have entire counties that are bankrupt, that are working with skeleton safety crews, police forces, and fire safety and things. So
I was playing basketball. I was going to tell you.
It's always a balance, man. It's a balance.
I was playing basketball with Neil Brennan in North Hollywood, and this is when you back in the day when you thought it was a good idea to have a six-pack and then go out and play because it would loosen you up a little bit.
Yeah.
It was like 100 degrees. We're in North Hollywood. And it's all brothers and me and Neil Brennan. And Neil's like skinnier than I am, right?
Yeah.
Then. But now I know I'm not skinny now. And we're playing. And I can't shoot at all.
Yeah.
I can pass and I can D. I can shut anybody down. It's just the footwork. I guess from wrestling, I can just lateral movement, quick twitch. I got it. I got a forearm in your back. Jordan rules.
Good.
And I can shut you down, or I can just keep a body on you at least and disrupt the flow. And this one guy could dunk. And when you play pickup ball with a guy that can dunk, It's alarming. It's fucking not normal when a guy just goes up, chock full of nuts. He's hanging on the rim.
His
fucking dick's in your ear.
How do I stop that?
And you're like, God, I got to figure out a way to jog up court before this guy's cock is in my ear. So this guy kept dunking on everybody. I'm like, I got him. This guy goes up to dunk, and I just give him a shove with my forearm. The ball goes straight up in the air. He takes two steps, and he goes face first into the pole. This is on Magnolia and, I guess, Tahunga.
Oh, shit.
The pole that supports the basket. Yeah, yeah. He goes face first, and he drops. And I'm like, oh, sorry. You all right, man? And he's holding his face like, it ain't cool. He stands up, and he goes, man, if you hear when I get back, you getting shot. You getting fucking shot. You getting shot. And then he's like crying. This is like a muscly, like, you know, 20-year-old black kid going, you getting fucking shot. And he's sprinting to go get some shit.
Oh, see, that's where I'd be running away.
So me and, yeah, that's what we're doing. But I have a convertible and my top's broken down.
Oh, shit.
So I can't even put it up and hide my face.
Oh, shit.
I got towhead blonde hair.
Yeah, that's an easy target, dude.
And everyone
that's
saw
an easy
us
thing
pull
to draw
up.
A beat up.
Yeah, because we pull up like, you know, to what's up, Dr. Dre? We're like bumping like
aim
the
for the yellow spot.
We're just fucking bumping Dre. Like everyone saw us pull up because we were acting cool.
You're getting shot.
And then I look at his teammate, who is like a little Earl Boykins looking guy, and I go, is he fucking serious? Like I'm acting like, what the fuck's with that guy? Right.
Yeah.
Even though I did actually. I go, is he fucking serious? And the kid without even looking at me, like dribbling between his legs, goes, you pushed him into a pole, man.
Holy, oh, Jesus.
And it was that complete laconic version of like,
pole, man.
I was like, oh, that guy, like, that was more alarming than you getting fucking shot.
Fuck.
Like, hey, man, you pushed him into a pole, man. And we got in the fucking the Mustang convertible and just peeled out. And then, but then you got to go around the park.
Oh God!
It was, and it's a bright blue, brand new chrome rims, you know, like 1990.
Yeah, you got to get the fuck out of there.
We got out of there.
Did he show back up? He just goes sprinting. That's not a very stable guy. You getting shot?
Like, where do you keep your gun in a bush?
I don't know, man.
Like, I'm gonna get on the bus, go home, and I'm gonna come back.
Fuck that! In that league, I'd be playing with a holster.
We played at Chelsea Piers with all the black comics. Like Kevin Hart was on our team.
I love Kevin Hart.
Sherrod Smalls.
Have you ever been
Matt Frost. Pete Corielli, by the way, doesn't miss.
He doesn't?
Fucking Pete Maravich from
is
the outside.
Is that right?
Not Pete Maravich because he wasn't that good of a dribbler. But like Steve Novak off the bench for the Knicks. Pete Corielli. But like the brothers on the team, to pass the ball is like a sign of weakness. Like if you want a shot.
He's a black hole.
Yeah, he's a black hole. But they all were. And anytime you play with most pickup games, it seems the cultural divide is the white guys, like, we'll take pride in it. Like, I hit you with that pass. Like, we like that.
Okay.
But you play with brothers, man. If you want to take a shot, get the inbounds and just go coast to coast. Because if you pass it, it ain't coming back.
That's so funny.
Take a ball and throw it into the ocean. That'll come back to you eventually. It'll work its way back to the sand. But you pass to Sherrod Smalls. He's fucking going up to dunk.
Is that right? Can Sherrod play?
No, they just try. By they, I mean comics that I was playing with.
Yeah.
It was fun. Chelsea Piers was tight. We had refs and shit. And like,
Chelsea Piers is great, man.
It's awesome.
Great
but
facility.
I didn't realize how bad I was at basketball until I had a ref go 3 seconds and point to me. I was like, what's 3 seconds? I didn't even know what it meant. It's when you're on defense. No, excuse me. It's when you're on. I know the listeners know, but just for those that you don't, I'm sorry. It's when you're on offense and you set up shop in the paint. And you just stand there and like, well,
right.
I'll just stand here until you, you can only stand there for 3 seconds.
Gotta,
and they're very liberal. Like, they'll let you hang out for like 8 seconds.
Right.
But eventually it's like, I can't ignore
you can't
this.
Just, you can't hold the ball.
You've just set up a lemonade stand and you're selling fucking Girl Scout good. He's like, but I literally was like, I acted like, what are you talking about? And then after the game, I was like, what's 3 seconds? That's how bad I am at basketball.
Who's your team?
The Knicks.
Is that right? But you're from Boston,
Knicks,
right?
Dodgers. No, I'm from Jersey. Knicks, Dodgers.
Oh, right.
Knicks. Yeah, I saw the Manhattan skyline from my Boston backyard.
That's right. So Knicks.
On acid. The fuck? How can I see the Manhattan skyline from Boston?
I don't know why I keep thinking you're from Boston. Who's your team, football team?
Jets and Dodgers.
You got to pick for a Super Bowl?
Yeah, Ravens, Giants. Giants repeat. There's a dynasty, and no one's
right
talking about the fact that the Giants.
I'm right with you.
MMA, who I like the most. Books, I would say if you're going to go, you got to read Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. I would say Ham on Rye by Bukowski. I would say Shot in the Heart by Michael Gilmore.
I never read that.
Gary Gilmore, Last Person Put to Death by Firing Squad.
Oh, wow.
His brother wrote it.
Okay.
Wow. I would say This Much I Know Is True by Wally Lamb.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
I always thought it was a chick book.
I think it's because he wrote... Yeah, it does seem that way.
Yeah, and I would see a lot of women reading it, so I was like, I'm not going to read that book.
And then I would read... I guess Nixon. Just watch that shit come... Watch a guy unravel. Hmm. So it's five. Is that five?
I listened to the Nixon tapes when he was basically had been impeached and it was all coming down. And he was talking to his guys. You got to keep the faith. Keep the faith. And, you know, we did a great job. And
he was the most presidential. Like people say, have you ever seen him with his jacket off?
Yeah, they didn't.
And they go, because he was maniacal about sitting, having a roaring fire. Even though
he addressed the nation?
No, just in his office, he would have a roaring fire at all times because it looked stately to sit by. But it would be August. Somebody said, have you ever seen him without his jacket? And they said, I think it was Dean Atkinson, goes, honestly, I've never seen him with his jacket unbuttoned.
Wow.
Like, he's a guy that was, from the time he was 20, he was like, these guys are all doing it wrong. I can be president and I'll do it this way. But he had such an inferiority complex.
Well, because he never realized
I won.
Yeah.
Let me let my hair down a little bit and hang out.
But he wasn't very likable. He wasn't. No,
he's completely unlikable.
How did he overcome that? How did he get elected?
He ran against someone who was in a mental hospital.
Oh.
Wasn't that it?
I don't think so.
Eagleton?
I'm not sure.
The guy he ran, it was Goldwater. I'm going to fuck this all up. He ran against somebody that had no chance of winning. Mm. And I'm pretty sure Eagleton was a senator. He was the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats. And it came out that when they're like, anything else we should know about you? Well, before we put you on the ticket, they didn't ask that question. And then it took very little research to realize he had fucking shock therapy.
Jesus.
For mental illness. And then they had to switch vice presidential candidates. And then he just fucking stomped ass.
I read an excellent book on foreign policy that he wrote, that Nixon wrote, called Real Peace. And it was about geopolitics. It was about how if you want real peace, you've got to take profit out of war. You've got to allow other countries to know that there is zero profit in starting a war, because if they do start a war, it'll be the end of their regime or the end of their, you know, profits. And it's a really good book about
I want to read that.
Yeah, it's called Real Peace.
There has to be,
because he was a great foreign policy mind.
Somebody in India, I just read this about, because they just met in Iran. And there was a piece in the LA Times about how isolating Iran is a complete failure. There's 100 countries today in Iran for Iran's summit.
I think this whole Iran sword rattling is not a good idea, because I'll tell you why. I don't think people would disagree with me, but a nuclear Iran, everybody's talking about. First of all, that's going to happen with a lot of countries because the technology is becoming so readily available.
It's not going to happen.
But the issue is this. Iran acts within its own self-interest. There is zero profit for Iran in dropping a nuclear weapon on Tel Aviv or something like that.
This notion
that they're crazy is
I disagree.
I'll
tell you what's the motivation. Yeah. What did you say?
There's zero motivation. It'd be the end of their country. Be the end of all of them who are making those decisions. You'd bring the United States and Israel's full wrath on you.
That's the long view. Okay.
Yeah.
Israel will have no retaliation because they'll be gone because it's the size of like New Jersey, right?
Well, they'd have to pull it off, and they couldn't pull it off. Israel.
But if Iran can effectively drive the Zionists into the sea, as they say over and over and over again,
well, one guy says that, you know,
Muslim nation will just become, in my opinion,
But they already are. Israel's already in a sea of enemies.
But I mean, it would just be one. They would just all converge into one giant Uber size of like India country.
I disagree. First of all, I don't think that'll ever happen with the Middle East. The Middle East is so fractious, and also I think if Iran did something as highly immoral as drop a nuclear weapon,
they're never
going to
have one. Because
if Pakistan, if Libya, if North Korea got one, believe me, eventually with all the resources
North Korea doesn't have
money
one.
Has, North Korea has over five, they think.
I can't say what a family member's job is in my family. But
oh, yeah?
They're level five.
From what I've read, they have
classified level
weapons.
Five.
Is that right?
Somebody closer to me, much closer to me than a cousin.
Hmm.
North Korea, when they get a missile, they shoot it off for the TV cameras. All hat, no cattle. The real problem. Iran has way too many intellectuals that will override the mullahs every step of the way. They know what it's like to be college. They're super smart. Iranians
they're very, very educated,
incredibly intelligent country.
I think they're like 90% literacy rate and things like that.
Pakistan is the biggest problem.
That's a dangerous
right now
country
because you have a cabinet with actual Al Qaeda members in it, and they don't wear signs.
Yeah, right. They don't.
So
wear
if
signs.
Sharif goes down, rock the Casbah.
Rock the Casbah.
Sharif
don't like it.
If he goes down, we don't know. As we have to keep him in power.
Well, Pakistan is a nuclear. It's a nuclear state. Pakistan under this
There's
guy
no
Khan, who is a national hero. This guy Khan, their nuclear scientist, ahead of the
nuclear
program,
and the story of Wrath of Khan,
gave weaponry, gave technology to Libya, gave technology to North Korea, etc. And that's a fact. And they behave very irresponsibly. And he's under house arrest, but living, you know, like a king in Pakistan. And you're right. And the idea that Pakistan didn't know that Osama bin Laden was there when he was a mile or two away from their West Point is a little far-fetched.
He was ordering takeout. Yeah. Osama bin Laden said, yo, man, let me get a double-double with cheese at the compound. Everybody got pregnant.
I
like when Tracy was on the talk shows going, yeah, I'm tired. I just killed Osama bin Laden, Dave. I had to take him out. He was getting everybody pregnant. I took out Osama bin Laden.
After they found him, I texted a bunch of my friends. I was like, you're welcome. Will Arnett was like, for what? I go, you read the news, don't they? They got him, didn't they? Gotta go. He was like, thank you.
I was told by somebody very high up, level 5 classified.
Yeah.
The real reason we fought Iraq and fought in quotes, because there has to be an opposing army for it to be a war.
Right.
And to all of you out there that think we should be in Afghanistan and Iraq, let me ask you this. What, draw me right now a photo of the Afghanistan enemy's uniform. And the thing also is, this is what I was told. We had to make Iraq flat so that the Israelis could be unilateral in their defense of Iran. I don't know if you've noticed, since the Iraq war has sort of ebbed out, I know it's not done, but Iran doesn't say that push the Zionists into the sea shit anymore, because Israel today will have 600 sorties over Iran,
right?
And they'll fly real low, and they just look down at Iran like, what was that? What the fuck? And they go, no, we didn't say anything, man.
Because
they're right there.
Because there's no
Iraq in
that's
the
what
middle,
I'm saying, though.
They couldn't
there's
get
no
there.
There's no profit for Iran in actually rattling their swords in a real way at Israel. I mean, in a lot of ways. Look, there are people who would disagree with me, especially in the Israeli cabinet, especially in the Likud party, like Benjamin Netanyahu. But I just think that I just think that there is not as much. I think it's.
Hold on, I got to write that down.
I think Iraq. Write that
thing,
down. Write that down.
Unfunniest
thing
said in an hour and a half.
I just think that there is that if we are going to start, if we actually are serious about taking Iran on, we haven't learned a lesson from Iraq and Afghanistan.
I don't even know why we would take them on. But here's the other thing. I read a great article in the LA Times, what I was going to say to you about the failure of isolating Iran. And there was an Indian professor from India who said there has to be as much reward for not having a nuclear program as there is for having
program.
That's a great quote.
That's the best way. The reward is to be included in the world community. That's what the reward is.
Lots of
pussy. To actually be taken seriously on the world stage, and to be included in commerce and all that the world has to offer, I guess.
So you're playing Paris next in a month ago?
Sure, and I'll be talking about Paris. I'm doing it tomorrow. I start tomorrow.
No sponsor?
No, not yet. Talking to some people.
Fake Mustache Studios.
It's Fake Mustache Studios.
Just saying.
All right, I'll look into it. Look, we covered a lot of ground here, Jay Moore. And
what are your 5 favorite books? But I can't have 5. Like, my list would actually be 15.
Well, but I'm very impressed
like,
with the fact that you're a reader. I didn't know you were a reader.
I just read Helter Skelter for the first time. That was other level.
That's a great book, man.
Yeah.
I read that a long time ago.
In the Charlie Sheen, if you want to download more stories, Charlie Sheen's up right now. Mm. And he said, we were talking about, like, the Manson family and, you know, killing Sharon. Like, they had the hit list. And, he said, I think a member of the Manson family came to my fucking house, man. We're like, really? He goes, yeah, I was like 9. Emilio was like 11. We were riding bikes in Malibu, right?
And this guy comes out of the fucking bushes. And he goes, hey, is Martin home? Is Martin home? And we're like, yeah, we're trying to act cool. We're like, who's asking? And so the guy goes, you know the Beatles song, Come Together, Over Me? They're like, yeah. He goes, I'm me. I'm the lamb. I need to talk to Martin. And they ran in the house. They're like, Dad, call the cops.
Jesus.
I'm me. I'm the lamb. I need to talk to Martin.
That's the one thing about celebrity on that.
There's a killer on the
crazy
road.
Crazy people.
So yeah, that's if you guys feel like downloading more stories. Maybe you get me up from 6th to 5th.
There you go.
And let's pull this Brian Callen up into the modern century.
I'm top 10. I'm delighted.
I think you just need to keep changing the name of the show as you go.
Just keep going. Just keep changing. Man Thoughts. Man Cast. Man.
Callen Cast.
Where are you going to be next? Where can people see you?
I'm going to be in Knoxville, but I'm not sure the name of the club, but it's all on jmoore.com. All
right.
And you know what? You come see me live. But download my podcast would be great.
And, guys,
and leave a
comment.
Leave a comment saying Brian Callen in it, so I know you came from here. Or man thoughts. What's a word we can have them all say?
Just say man thoughts. Give me your man thought. Tweet me your man thoughts.
No, I mean the comment section on iTunes. Just leave a 1-star review. No, if you leave a nice review.
I never read reviews.
I don't. I
just
want to know.
Look
how
at my comments because I just keep doing what I do, and then I mean I'll look at them, you know, and thank people and stuff. But
well, you have two. There's only two. You have 90%, because I was looking at it this morning, 5 stars, this is great, and then 10%, 1 star, a very specific group of people.
Oh, really?
Saying that you were cooler when you were hanging out with this other group of people.
Oh, well, I never worry about it. It's all white noise to me. I appreciate people who like me, and I appreciate
it. But it does help the rankings. People need to know. If you leave a comment for the Brian Callen Show or Man Talk, Man Thoughts, leave a comment, rate it. And leave a comment. There's like an algorithm at iTunes where they take, like, it's new subscriptions, comments, rankings. So if you actually put this down and you rank this show and you log on and do it, like, I'll do it when I go home.
Right.
Do my part, you know?
There you go. I appreciate
it. And if you guys want to do it for more stories, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
There it is, guys. And thank you for listening. And
when you're in Vegas, stay out of the yellow pages. Okay.
My books, my recommended books today are The China Study. You can read some of Landmark, which breaks down the Obamacare bill.
You can't have a favorite book and tell people to read some of it.
I know, but that's hard.
So, you got to get
a lot of people are young and they're you know, read The China Study. Read The China Study. It's a very
good
book.
Outliers.
Yeah, I love anything by Malcolm Gladwell, but those are fun. The China Study is pretty illuminating. It was kind of jaw-dropping to me. I he's a very credible scientist, and he talks about what's wrong with the way our food industry and government works.
What's worse, the food industry or the people that put out, like, antibiotics, the pharmaceutical
It's not,
worse,
it's,
right?
You know, when you talk about worse, whatever, these companies, these huge companies like Kraft or Pfizer are behaving the way anybody would behave to make money. The problem isn't the companies or even the people. The problem is the incentive structure. The problem is the system that allows you to garner profit by influencing the people that set the standard. Government, the amount of money they spend lobbying the government. Special interests, it seems, are hijacking our country. And James Madison said they were going to cancel each other out. I don't think it's happening. I think the problem with the big pharma is they don't allow other competitors. It's they violate antitrust laws. I think the problem with huge food companies is that when the Dairy Association, like the Danon Institute and things, or Cattlemen's Association, when these people are pushing just sugar and the sugar lobby, just sugar, animal protein, and dairy on 28 million children in the school lunch program, well, I got a little problem with that. There's another way to eat. And why is obesity
you
an
help
epidemic?
Me, by the way, since you're on my podcast, I lost 14 pounds.
Good
lentils,
well,
baby.
Good. There you go. Read. I mean, there are a lot of books to read on this, but why in the world? Why in the world are we still have an obesity epidemic? And
aren't you amazed at how fucking fat everybody is?
There seems to be, well, because there's profit in doctors will not tell you to change your lifestyle or to change the way you eat. They'll give you a drug. That's what happens now. And instead of saying, well, my body is gaining all this weight because I'm putting the wrong things into it. Now, nah, we're not going to talk about Bull. That.
Stop eating, you fat fuck.
Stop eating.
You're like a fucking nut.
I should read you some statistics, but I believe it's somewhere about 50% of Americans take some kind of a prescription drug. Or it might be 80%. Now, that includes the pill for women, but there are other drugs that people are taking. I think 50%, 38%.
If you don't take the pill, you'll get really fat, too.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
A fucking baby.
We are a fat nation. We are not a healthy nation. I started taking because of the way we eat.
I started doing acupuncture. Because I was getting sick all the time. I had diarrhea for like 3 years.
That's not good.
My wife finally goes, yeah, that's like when people die of cancer. Right, they go, colon cancer. If only I'd caught this sooner.
Yeah.
So I had all tests done, colonoscopy, endoscopy, and they're like, we think it's stress. And I'm like, can't be. I have no stress. Well, apparently I have like this subconscious inordinate amount of stress, and I don't get panic attacks anymore, and it redirected itself by peeing out of my ass.
Yeah.
Acupuncture.
Good.
I've been doing it for 3 years. I've not been on antibiotics since. Wow. I've never taken an Advil.
Wow.
I've never taken – so like – I didn't realize there was an alternative to tetracycline and a Z-Pack taking NyQuil and Tylenol PMs to fall asleep. Like, I went into acupuncture. The lady took my pulse and said, why do you sweat so much when you sleep? By taking my pulse.
Yeah.
And I go, it's normal. She goes, it's not normal. Your wife, she's sweating her sleep? I go, no. And she goes, same bedroom, same temperature, not normal. Why you have diarrhea? Why you get so many colds? But by taking my pulse, this lady figured out everything wrong with me. Cool. And she goes, your kidney channel – and your spleen channel, very black. We're going to free it all up.
Jesus.
And now it's like I'll go make an acupuncture appointment and go, you know what? I have a very low libido. I would like to just have a very high libido. And then I just go home and fucking crush my wife and call her a little fucker.
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I eat vegetables. I eat some raw fat, like raw nuts, seeds, avocados.
Nuts. I saw your raw
and
nuts.
And fucking protein. All right? That's what it's about. Try to stay away from sugar and simple carbohydrates like that Danish, that muffin, and that fucking
white bread.
Don't
eat anything that was ever white.
Yeah, and also most things that have been through a mill, including white rice. Change it for brown rice, that's all. You'll be fine. Here's my question to you.
Yes, sir?
Where do you want to be in 10 years?
Kauai.
Do you think you'll ever retire from the business?
I don't think we can because we enjoy it too much. We're in the only business that brings constant joy. It's not like we're looking at the clock going, God, when can I be done making all these people happy with my jokes? So I would like to be in Kauai and maybe just writing books and producing TV, you know, just coming into town to produce TV shows that I'm not in, like a Last Comic Standing or something.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I'd like to just continue doing what I'm doing, more of it, on a grander scale, I suppose.
Do you believe in heaven?
You're
not a Christian. Are you Buddhist? Are you?
I feel like I'm. I could talk to you forever about religion. I'm not an atheist. I believe that there. There's I just. Something. I believe in God.
An
I believe
electron.
In a. I just believe in living a moral, ethical life, and
agnostic. You're not sure what it is.
I'm agnostic in that I don't want to give a form to my God. I don't want to give it to a rabbi who lived 2,000 years ago in the form of Jesus Christ or in you know, I like the notion of what the Buddha Siddhartha Gautama was talking about, this idea of you can reach enlightenment as you rid yourself of your appetites and
what's your
and
idea of heaven?
Thing. My idea of heaven, I guess, is almost in some ways sometimes I feel like I'm living it when I'm on stage and I'm using all my talents along the lines of excellence, right? When I'm surprising myself. I don't know how it gets better. I don't know how it gets better.
No wonder we get along.
I was just in Chicago and sold out some shows. And
sorry?
It's nothing like no better feeling.
I'm sorry?
I was in Chicago.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm sorry. You're in Chicago.
Oh, I liked it there.
Well, big Chicago joke. Fuck Chicago. Hey. They all suck.
Well, but there's nothing like kind of getting to do what you're supposed to do. And making other people feel good.
I can't believe you said what you said because I always say, when people say, what's your idea of heaven? I always, I really thought about it.
Yeah.
More of this.
More of this.
I'll love you with all the madness in my soul.
There it is. I'm going to end that with, I'm going to end this podcast with you quoting Bruce Springsteen. Jay Moore, you special original. Thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you, brother. Put your name on it.
Will do. All right, guys. Thanks again. Yes, you can, please. Yeah! Jay Moore, ladies and gentlemen, one night only. Enjoy your fruit compo.
Thoughts with Brian Callen.